I want to welcome everyone. My name is Dana Barocca. I am the CEO of Lighthouse Consulting Services, and we'll be hosting our program today. For those of you joining us for the first time, Lighthouse provides in-depth work style and personality assessments for both new hire candidates and for staff development. We also offer a number of workshop topics for traditional association and trade organization conferences, as well as our next generation webinar, the Open Line Series, which you'll be experiencing today. Our Keeping on Track Open Line Series is in response to a number of calls we've been getting from many of our clients to address the various business issues that most organizations are facing today. We've asked each of you to fill out a survey while registering so we can focus our time together. We have another full capacity audience, and our goal is to make this an interactive program. So on your screen, you'll see an area you can send questions or ideas during our discussion, and we'll attempt to respond to you as many as possible. So please join us with your thoughts and insights along the way during our program. You'll also want to have some paper and a pen handy to take notes, since we'll be sharing many ideas that you'll want to consider and implement with your team and trusted advisors. On the lower right side of your screen, you can print out the slides of the program to make notes, which is really a very convenient feature we've added on recently. Also, at the end of our program, we'll be opening the line up so you can talk live to Rob and ask any questions that you might have. Our special guest today is Rob Hupp, who is a longtime friend, a business colleague, and also a very cool guy and very knowledgeable on this topic. Rob is a partner with Roth Hupp Partners. He has over 25 years of experience working with a diverse client base, providing hands-on approaches and client relationship management plans and training programs. Rob has a BA degree in economics from Georgetown University and an MBA from the University of Chicago Graduate School of Business. I feel privileged to have Rob with us today and to share ideas that will help each of us in preparing for the future and for dealing with today's business issues. Rob, let's jump into our topic, selling in today's environment, getting the inside track. Welcome, welcome, welcome.
Thank you very much, Dana. I appreciate the invitation to be with you in the group today.
This is a pretty hot topic. Why don't we go to the first slide?
Sure. Okay.
Because the environment for selling, most individuals in a selling environment or marketing environment are frankly very frustrated, trying to get people to move forward or to get anything done and meet numbers and topics and all the rest of the thing. And I know you'll be able to bring some light to this.
Well, thank you. I hope so. I think just about everybody who I'm talking to, and it's consistent with my own experience right now, I mean, this is certainly a very challenging business time for all of us. That said, all of us do need to go out. We need to make new contacts. We need to ideally follow some form of a sales process. We need to qualify opportunities and close business and deliver high quality products and services. And so I think sometimes, and you know, I don't want to point to the media, but I think sometimes it's a little easy to get sort of caught up in the well, these are real difficult times, and they certainly are challenging. But at the end of the day, we all need to go out and do what we do professionally. And so that's really what we want to talk about here on today's Open Line program. This first slide is one, and I'm sure I borrowed this from someone. I don't think I made it up from scratch, but I do like to think of, you know, sales is like a house, and I think most of us love our houses. We love our homes, but it seems like there's always something to be dealt with. There's something to be looked at, something to be fixed, something to be improved, something to be thought about. So I think as we're thinking about sales and we're thinking about developing business, we want to bring some of that thinking and that set of sensibilities sort of to what it is we are doing. So today, what I'd like to cover in part is I'd really like to talk about two contrasting sales systems or sales processes. I'm a big believer in processes, and I think if you look across the business enterprises, whether it's your own business or your clients' businesses, we have gotten very, very good in most areas of business to build and implement effective processes. And I think sales tends to be that one area where many, many, many organizations, large and small, have not really put in place anything that I think approaches a standard, repeatable process. So one of the things we'd like to do today is to walk the group through, albeit at a high level, a couple of contrasting processes that are often used in the sales world.
That'd be great. Okay. Let me go to the next slide.
Okay. The first family, if you will, of selling systems, I'm gonna label here traditional selling systems, and there are some differences among them, but the key steps are what's outlined on this slide, which is number two, if you're following along. You know, step one, there is some initial contact or some initial interaction between a buyer and a seller. And that can be a fairly brief, fairly limited interaction. But there's the second step there would be there's some preliminary indication of interest. There's some discussion around, gee, you know, I have a need for this, or I have a particular problem in this area. Step three, there's usually some information exchanged. It may be somewhat informal. It may be more formal in the form of a bid or a proposal. Step four, the seller typically, you know, wants to close the sale. So there's an attempt made to close, and then often what happens, candidly, more times than not at the end of the process here, the buyer disappears. And that happens for a number of reasons.
Rob, somebody just wrote a question, and by the way,
sure.
Those of you just signing in now, we'd like to encourage everyone to submit questions or ideas or thoughts along the way, and somebody just wrote a question, and why do they disappear? Why does a buyer disappear?
Yeah, I mean it can happen, Dana, for any of a number of reasons. In some cases, the prospective buyer feels pressure from the salesperson or the person attempting to complete the transaction. In other cases, you know, the buyer was not particularly interested or was not really all that qualified for this particular opportunity, and so with a relatively low interest level, you know, they learn some things from talking to the seller, but you know, at the end of the day, this was not a significant enough problem for them to stick around and to take action.
Rob, I was talking the other day, and I came up with this idea, and I should get a trademark or a service mark on this called the hope quotient. What would you say as far as sales, typical salesperson that's out there, we're all hoping for the hope quotient. Where does that come into play as far as creating more problems than benefits?
Sure. There's a book that has been around for a fairly long time by a pretty well-known sales coach and sales trainer, and then the title of the book is Hope Is Not a Strategy.
Yeah.
And I think that's an apt title. You know, we all need to be positive and we need to be optimistic, particularly during these times. That said, you know, hope really, like the title suggests, it really can't be a sales strategy. You really need to go through a process, and we'll talk about that further. You need to qualify the opportunities, and for those that are unqualified, close them out. And for those that are qualified, pursue them to a point where you do close them or you do close them out.
Okay, so a good topic then for people listening today and attending is to sit down with your sales folks and identify what the hope quotient is for various accounts they're working on so they can start to get used to when they need to move on. So,
mm-hmm.
Rob, why don't we go to the next slide?
Okay.
Deeper into this topic.
Okay. So what I'd like to do now is I'd like to contrast that traditional selling system with a really with an alternative, something that we call the art of mutual agreement. Here, what we are really endeavoring to do is we're endeavoring to secure some level of agreement and commitment through each step in the process. So the seller and the buyer know from step to step where each other stands. And you know, once think about it from each of your own experience, if you know what's going to happen next, and you know, I think a great example is you know the sort of childhood dentist story. If the dentist tells you, okay, this is what's going to happen next, you're going to feel a little, you know, a little prick here, it's not going to hurt, then I'm going to do this, then I'm going to do this. If we all know kind of what's coming next, it relieves a lot of the pressure and the anxiety. So that's really one of the key things that we're looking to accomplish here, is to kind of take the pressure off both the seller and the buyer.
That's a great idea.
Yeah. The first sort of major step here is establishing the relationship, and we'll talk about that in a subsequent slide. And really here, you know, before we do jump into our pitch, you know, there are things that we want to be doing to help set the minds of both parties a bit at ease. The second area is we want to qualify or disqualify an opportunity, and there's absolutely nothing wrong with disqualifying. In fact, our default should probably be this is not a qualified opportunity unless proven otherwise. And then the final kind of major step here is, you know, we're either going to close the deal or we're going to close the file, and we'll talk about each of those.
Okay.
So, here though, what we are trying to do is we're laying out a process, we're sharing that process, and we're following it.
That's a question just came in, Rob, on
sure.
The closing the file. Should they be revisited?
Yeah, I mean we can talk about this now. We can talk about it later. Let's talk about it now in the interest of time, so we don't forget. Yeah, I think when you're closing the file, when you and the prospect agree, gee, there is not a fit right now between what they're looking to achieve or acquire and your offerings, I think it is appropriate to ask the prospect, you know, would it make sense for me to recontact you, or would it make sense for us to touch base in 3 months or 6 months? Yeah, because sometimes we do come to the end in the process, and it just doesn't make sense for either party to move ahead. But oftentimes things change, people's roles change. I had a conversation with a company president yesterday. He and I had chatted a year and a half ago. He was with another organization then, and candidly, in his role in that organization, it really did not make sense for us to go forward. He has now moved into, he's the president of another organization, and yeah, things are very, very different in his new organization.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, we have stayed in touch, and I'm hoping to do some business going forward.
So the main thing is to ask the question.
Yeah, and I think sometimes when we get a no at the end, you know, we're a little motivated, a little anxious to wrap things up and close things out. And I would suggest that we stop and we do think through having a conversation about really a couple things. One would be, you know, would it make sense for us to get back in touch, and if so, in what time frame? And two, you know, now that you know a little bit more about what I do, and I know a little bit more about what you do, you know, are there potential referrals or in introductions that we could make to and for each other?
Okay, that's good. We've had a couple people ask if it's possible to print the slides out at this point. Unfortunately, we're into the program, but we'll be sending copies out later on. so y'all have those. Why don't we go to the next slide, Rob?
Sure.
And I'd like to encourage, if you have questions or thoughts, to we try to do it throughout the program to share those.
Okay. Really, the first kind of major phase is really establishing the relationship between the buyer and the seller. This has two major components within it. First one I'm sure everybody's heard of, bonding and rapport. Here we're focused on things like active listening, asking good questions, and then really listening to the answers, you know, looking for and reading body language, things like that. And there's lots of very good material out there about bonding and rapport. I think it's always important. I think during these times, it's even more important. It seems like everybody's, you know, grappling with a host of challenges. So I think taking a little time to slow down on the front end and working to establish a sound communication process with the other party is probably more important than ever. Second is something that we call the upfront contract, or really this is the rules of engagement. Here, this is really about sort of defining how it is together we're going to go through and see if it makes sense for us to potentially do a business with one another. So there are some things that can be shared and can be agreed upon by both parties really early on in the process. I mean, an example of this is for an upcoming meeting you're going to be having, and this is presumably maybe an initial meeting, could be a second meeting. You know, there are five things that we strongly recommend or suggest that you get worked out in advance of each of those meetings, and that could be a face-to-face meeting or something you do by phone. First, what's the purpose of the upcoming meeting? You know, what is it that you're looking to accomplish? Second, what's the buyer's agenda? What does he or she want to accomplish in that meeting? Third would be, what is your, and I'm assuming you're the seller, what's your agenda? What are things you want to ensure get accomplished in that meeting? Fourth, what are the logistics for the meeting? And so sometimes when people hear this, they're a little surprised. Gee, that doesn't seem important. Well, it can be terribly important, you know. I mean, where is the meeting going to be held, and how much time is going to be set aside by both parties? I'm sure most folks on the call have had the experience where they assumed or they thought, gee, I'm going to have an hour with this person to meet. They never really discussed it up front, but they kind of assumed it, and they got to the meeting, and the person said, "Listen, I'm pressed. I've got about 10 minutes. What do you have for me?" And that's just not a situation that we want to find ourselves in. And then the last, and certainly not least, what are the acceptable outcomes of a particular meeting? You know, and we're going to agree in advance as to what those outcomes are, and they could be things like, well, you know, at the end of the meeting, we're going to decide whether it makes sense to continue our discussion or no. There's not sufficient overlap between what you're trying to accomplish and what I can do for you, and we'll just agree to part on friendly terms and possibly stay in touch.
Those five points I have found, Rob has been my sales trainer for a number of years now, to be some of the most powerful points that I've ever learned, is setting the agreement up front from a time frame standpoint. Then you know where you're at, and then you can adjust what you need to.
And that's not to say that a prospect or a prospective client isn't gonna come to you and say, "Listen, Dana, I thought we were gonna have an hour today, but something has come up, and I really can only give you 15 minutes." Well, you at that point have a couple of choices. I think typically the best one is to reschedule for a time where the other person can spend more time with you. Now, sometimes if you just have 15 minutes, maybe there is a single item or a single issue that you can cover. What I'd probably cover in that 15-minute window is, okay, let's figure out then what we're going to do in our next meeting.
Okay, somebody just wrote in, they're a sales manager, and they they said they don't spend enough time with their salespeople on teaching them how to do sales planning.
Right.
Do you find that typical?
Well, I mean, you know, folks today, everybody today is so busy, and often in many cases they're, you know, doing the work that in the past, you know, 1.3 or 1.5 or 2 FTEs would have been doing. So, yeah, I suspect that's the case in many organizations. Also, I know from the sales managers that I work with, many of them spend the bulk of their time on what I'll call, on what they call firefighting. It's just, you know, dealing with the sort of, you know, the crisis of the day, and many of them do say, gee, I wish I could spend more time with my sales team, kind of helping them to sort of plan out their upcoming calls.
Okay. One other thing before we jump to the next slide. I was talking to a client the other day, and they said they were looking at their sales force, and then they asked the question, if I was fighting a fire, would I want those folks behind me and coming into the burning building with me?
Mm-hmm.
Who would I trust? Who could I depend on? And what a profound question to ask. Who's coming in. That's why we're finding in our business, because most of our business is doing new hire assessments, we're seeing more companies spending more time and being more diligent in doing in-depth personality assessments to make sure they have the right people coming on board.
Sure.
Why don't we go to the next slide?
Okay. So just to wrap up on this sort of establishing the relationship, this is something that will continue. This is something that will continue through the entire sales process. You know, the bonding and rapport and the upfront contracts. Now, you could, and this has happened. You could experience situations where, candidly, the prospect or the buyer just won't agree and won't keep upfront contracts, and in those cases, I think you do have to think about, gee, you know, maybe we should disqualify this prospect and move on. So, assuming we've established an initial relationship, what we're going to be doing next, we're going to be, you know, qualifying that opportunity. And here we suggest that you qualify in three key areas, and we'll talk about them. And we also suggest that you qualify in this particular sequence. First area, you know, what's the pain, the issue, the problem, the burning platform, if you will, that your prospect is looking to solve, to fix. And on the flip side of that, by fixing that problem, what's the potential gain that they will see? So here we really want to understand from their perspective, you know, what are the pains and the gains that they're experiencing and the gains they're looking to achieve. And this can be a pretty straightforward topic, or it can be a more complex topic requiring multiple discussions. Second area is something we call an investment or budget. This is what is the prospect contemplating they're going to invest to solve these pains and to achieve these gains. And then third, what does their decision-making process look like? You know, who are going to be involved in the decision-making process? How or what criteria are they going to use? When are they planning on making a decision? That I think is particularly important in these challenging economic and business times. I was in a meeting yesterday. I mentioned to Dana out in the Inland Empire, and in speaking with the prospect, we had a very, very lengthy decision around or discussion around when it is they're going to make their decision. And there are some internal factors and some external factors. The external factor in this case happens to be the resolution of state budget deficit. So it was very enlightening, certainly to me, to know in some detail when it is that decision is going to be made, because I can, you know, do some some prioritizing and adjust my schedule accordingly?
That's a profound question, actually, because asking the question again, gathering information can help then on the sales call timing, which goes back to how a salesperson is going to budget their time, which is an investment on behalf of the organization and the salesperson.
Absolutely.
That's very profound.
So here to sort of wrap up this qualification sequence, you're really trying to determine, you know, is there a strong fit? Is there a sound fit between what your prospect is looking to accomplish and acquire and what it is you have to offer in terms of your services, expertise, and products, if that's relevant? And the idea here is through these qualifying conversations, it's going to allow you to very much tailor your offering to this prospect's specific situation, to their pain, their investment, and their decision-making process.
Uh-huh. That's great.
Okay.
Okay, thank you.
Good.
Next slide.
So we're going to assume here for purposes of our discussion that, you know, you were able to elicit the pain, you have a good sense of their investment. And here now, when we're talking investment, this is what they're contemplating investing. This is not yet what your products and services cost. And then you have a good understanding of their decision-making process. So, you know, we're still sort of you know seeing green lights. If we were to see red lights here, we would probably say to the prospect, you know, I just have this sense that there's not a good overlap, but between, you know, what it is you're looking to do and what our capabilities are. Now, for many of us, that's something we'd have a little heartburn about saying. But if that's really our professional assessment, then really that's what we need to say. And we if we say that, we sometimes hear, yep, I think you're right, I don't see a fit, or I don't see a fit now, or no, there's something key that you missed, or something maybe that I didn't share with you that leads me, the prospect, to believe, yeah, that there is a reasonable fit, and we should continue our discussion.
What if someone at that point, the person you're selling to, says, you know, just tell me what the cost is here. What's it going to cost me?
Well, yeah, and that's frequently something that we're confronted with. I think, candidly, until you understand, you know, pain, investment, and decision making, I think it's very, very hard to give them an accurate cost estimate. And I'll frequently say that to people when confronted with that question. You know, I don't yet know enough about what it is you're trying to accomplish, your time frames, you know, what resources you can commit to the effort, how much of my time is going to require. I just don't know enough about that to give you a meaningful cost. But as we complete this set of discussions, you know, I'll be able to give you you know, an estimate, or I'll be able to give you a couple of alternatives.
Okay.
And historically, what I found, folks who are genuinely interested are usually willing to accept that explanation and to provide me the time to do what I need to do. Folks who then want to break it off, candidly, my experience has been that they often, you know, are just not that qualified as his prospects in the first place.
And by being more thorough on the questioning, it's also helping with the bonding and the rapport, because it's showing that you care and you know about the service or product that you're trying to get across.
Right.
To someone.
Okay. Right. And, you know, back again to our rules of engagement, I think during the rules of engagement piece in establishing a relationship, you know, you want to share with them, you know, this is the process that I typically use with prospective clients to determine if there's a good fit between what it is I do and what it is you're looking for. And this is going to probably require us to have a couple of pretty detailed conversations. You know, are you willing to do that, and are you okay with that?
And you're spending quite a bit of time right now on this topic of qualifying.
Yeah, it's huge. Yeah,
people try to jump to the close and they don't do a good enough job.
Well, yeah, and by jumping to the close, they often don't really know enough about the prospect's situation to make a compelling proposal, and they often place often unknowingly they place pressure on the prospect, and that's when the prospect feels it's time to hightail it out of there.
Okay.
So
I want to go to the next slide.
Okay, so we're assuming that we've made it through the qualification process, and now we're going to go for the close. Here there are two major steps. First step we call fulfillment. That's really where you present or you propose. It could be very informal. It could be very formal, depending on the business you're in and the clientele you serve. What's key here is your presentation, your proposal, formal or informal. It's very much targeted to what you learned back in your qualifying of around pain, investment, and decision. And you know, prospects like to see their words and their ideas that are captured there. Prospects tend not to argue with their own data. So if you can couch it in particularly the pain in their terms, and then you can speak to how your solution will address it. And here we're strongly suggesting that you not, and we've all written them over, you know, sometime, you know, we're suggesting that you not submit a kitchen sink proposal that has every good idea that you ever had in it. And so here it's going to be a very, very targeted proposal, and that could be a letter proposal or whatever is, again, relevant in your market.
Tell us about the post-sell.
I'm sorry?
Tell us about the post-sell.
Yeah. Post-sell is an interesting step. And, you know, this is at the end of the process. You have gotten a preliminary indication that your prospect is going to move forward with you. And so the post-sell is really about taking some concrete steps to avoid bad things happening and also taking concrete steps to encourage good things to happen. Well, what would be a couple of examples of bad things? Well, one would be something we've all heard of called buyer's remorse. You know, the buyer makes a preliminary decision, and then before you can get back to them with some form of a letter of understanding or a working agreement, they have second thoughts. So here we recommend that you have a conversation with the buyer at this stage and ask them, hey, is there anything that could come up at this point that would have you think seriously about us not doing business at this time? I think this is particularly relevant during these challenging times. Now, I know it's a tough question for all of us to ask because we've worked hard, we've followed the process, they've said they're going to do business with us. You know, we're a little inclined not to want to rock the boat. And I'm not suggesting here that we rock the boat hard, but I am suggesting, I believe it's very worthwhile to say to the prospect, you know, is there something that could come up that would preclude or delay us from doing business?
Everyone should write that down. Say that one more time, Rob.
Is there something that could come up that would preclude or delay us from doing business?
Okay.
And the idea here is, if we know what those things are, we're in a much better position to help the prospect to navigate them. If we don't know what they are, then there is some likelihood that, you know, we'll get a call or an email or a voicemail that says, gee, Dana, I know we spent all this time and we're all set to go, but, you know, something that's been sort of in the background, it was a risk, it was a problem, has reared its ugly head, and I really think I should now hold off two or three months on us getting started.
In traditional selling, or at least maybe immature selling process, might be the seller gets scared and might think, oh my gosh, I better not say anything. Something could go wrong, but I cross my fingers, they'll sign the dotted line, or they'll join,
exactly,
or do this or that. Versus,
right,
if you ask, you're in control.
Yeah, And if there is something out there looming, and they, and at this point, you know, you've established good bonding and rapport to the process, they have some, there's some trust and some credibility, and they share it with you what that issue is, you're in a much better position to help them to deal with it. So that's one thing we want to deal with on the sort of bad side. Also on the bad side is something we've all heard of too, or experienced, where, you know, which I call vendor's vengeance, where there's a competitor who is working with this client today, and the competitor gets wind that they're gonna leave them and go work with you, and so the competitor, who hasn't done a particularly good job of taking care of this client, swoops in at the 11th and a half hour, and, you know, makes some concessions and cuts price and agrees to some things, and you're sort of on the outside looking in. So if it is a situation where you know they're working with somebody else, and they've worked with them for a long time, I think it is reasonable to ask, you know, have you thought a little bit about how you're going to deal with Charlie when Charlie calls and says, gee, Dana, I'm just flabbergasted that you're going to take your business elsewhere. Now, again, I think most of us, human nature is, we don't want to raise these issues this close to the finish line. But if it is a case where the prospect has worked for a long time with another firm, I'd much rather hear how they're going to deal with it and help them anticipate dealing with it than basically leave it to chance.
Okay.
And I've had prospects say, well, yeah, you're right, I'm a little worried about that. Any suggestions? And yeah, you're often in a position to help coach them through how they might want to deal with that call when they're going to get it.
Mm-hmm.
So that's things that we're trying to preempt. Over on the other side of the ledger, good things that we want to have happen is we want to get off on the right foot with how we're going to be working together. So here you're going to probably want to set another upfront contract. You're going to want to define, okay, exactly how is it that we're going to start working together. And, you know, for those of you on the call from larger organizations, you know, things may get turned over from a sales and a business development team to an operations team or to a customer support team or to a project team. So you want to make sure that handoff or set of handoffs is accomplished smoothly and crisply. And, you know, we've all heard war stories of some big deal gets closed and then the salesperson, you know, exits the picture and for some reason the handoff to other parts of the organization just is very poorly handled. And then it's hard to recover from that. And then the second positive thing here would be just laying the groundwork for future referrals and introductions. Here the concept is have a conversation with your new client about, you know, we've just started working together, Dana, and so I wouldn't expect you this early in the game to be comfortable making referrals and introductions, but I'd really like to come back to you in a time frame that you're comfortable with. You know, given our schedule and what we're going to be doing, when would be a time frame when I could come back to you and we could have a follow-up conversation about referrals and introductions?
So, Rob, so again, also what you're sharing today, we're going to go to the next slide in just a minute.
Mm-hmm.
There are many sales trainers that I know that are more of the football, rah-rah-rah kind of individuals, and your methodology is more process-oriented. Which
mm-hmm.
I find to be very helpful and very respectful for my style and others that
okay.
you work with. But I would say for those of you attending today that it's very important to have a system or process that complements the individual seller
mm-hmm.
and to frame that in a respectful way to people, because then they'll find the methodology to share their process and system with others, because this is the time in our economic cycle to put the pedal to the metal and also to be prepared and start looking for top salespeople to bring on board first quarter next year, second quarter next year, and hit it running to take advantage of the potential market share. So having the systems and processes that you're sharing today, Rob, are really important.
Right. Well, and this company president I mentioned earlier in the program, I mean, that's exactly where he is today. I mean, he said, you know, I want to be in a position that late this year, early next year, our sales processes are where they want to be, where they need to be, so I can begin to ramp up the team.
Let's segue this to the next slide.
Okay. Here, I think just very briefly, because I know we got to be mindful of time. You know, back to the traditional sales system we covered at the beginning of the program. It's really a case where the salesperson or the seller is really doing the majority of the work, and the second system, it's really more of a peer.
Did you forward the slide?
What happened? Oh, I'm sorry, Dana. Thank you for catching that.
There we go.
Okay. Yeah. First system, really, the salesperson's doing the vast majority of the work, and it puts an awful lot of pressure on the salesperson. Second system is really designed to be more of a peer-to-peer professional interaction, and through the qualification steps, which we talked about, really helps to sort of weed out unqualified prospects and unqualified opportunities.
Okay. And
as
far as qualifying or moving on, so really weed them out, huh?
Yeah, and you know, and that's not to be critical or dismissive or anything. It's just if there's not a fit, it's in neither party's best interest to continue the discussion and the interaction.
So it's out of respect and also for time.
Exactly.
So the
seller exactly.
Can move on to something.
I mean, we've all taken on business that we wished we probably hadn't. And so, you know, if there's not a strong fit, you know, see it the way it is and close things out.
Okay.
Excuse me.
Okay. Let's go to the next slide.
Okay.
And if any of you would like to share or ask the question of some of your top challenges, sales challenges that you're facing, we're going to open up the line in just a few minutes. But at the same time, if you could send them in, we have a few that have come in. I'd like to capture them now. So, Rob, one of the questions that came in is how do you leave a message on voicemail?
Wow.
That
yeah.
Should someone leave a message is one of the questions. And
sure.
Another person wrote in, if leaving a message, how do you do it so it's compelling?
Okay. No, great, great topic, and we could probably do an entire program on it in the future. In general, my guidance is sort of the following. One, I try to reach the person several times by phone before leaving a voicemail message. You know, and what I found often with owners and presidents and sales VPs, you often have a better time catching them on the phone either early in the day or late in the day when they're not in meetings. If you do leave a voicemail message, let me start with a couple of quick don'ts, and then we'll hit some do's. Don't leave a lengthy information-packed message that's kind of a summary of your bio or your resume. These are not listened to completion, and they're deleted midstream. Second, if you are leaving even a shorter message, which we'll touch on a second here, in general, I suggest that you don't leave a company name on the message, because that typically sends up a red flag that this is really a sales call. Two general approaches to leaving voicemail that work well, but you have to practice them a bit. First general approach, sound like a client or a friend. You know, that might sound something like, Dana, this is Rob. 310-426-2600. And there, you know, and I probably didn't do it too well. You know, you do want to slow down when you're leaving the phone number. So sound like a client or a friend. Second is to create some interest. And, you know, it might sound something like, Dana, This is Rob Hupp. I was doing some research on Lighthouse Consulting, and I have several questions I need to ask you. 310-426-2600. So here, I mean, of these two approaches, my suggestion is, you know, pick the one that you're most comfortable with and practice it. And we can you can practice on live people, or something we often suggest is leave a couple of voicemails on your own voicemail, and then go back and listen to them.
That's a good idea. Now, Rob, also somebody was just asking that if when dialing someone, there are some sales folks that will call the operator and find out when is Susie or Joe going to be available.
Mm-hmm.
And the salesperson will dial until they pick up the phone. But there's also the caller ID issue.
Right.
Because any thoughts on how to get around that, or does it matter?
No, some folks won't pick up their phone unless they recognize the number of the incoming person. And so you're probably oftentimes going to be stuck having to leave voicemails.
Or is it helpful for some sales department to actually put call blocking on it?
I have some clients who have done that, and I think that the results there are mixed. I think
Okay. They're
mixed.
Okay. Now, another question. I want to handle as many as possible before we go to the opening lineup. How to motivate customers to move forward in such an uncertain environment?
Well, yeah, I think a couple of quick reactions. One, I think that's why during the qualification process, you really do need to understand their decision making and their getting started time frame. It's just more important than ever to understand that and to ask them. Then, once you do get a sense of what their time frame is, if their particular pain that you've identified or set of pains, if you and they can quantify the impact of the pain, that can often create an opportunity to have a discussion with them about, you know, the cost of getting started versus the cost of ongoing delays.
Okay.
In discussions with a prospect I had recently, I mean, they're experiencing significant costs which they'd like to squeeze out of their cost structure, and for each and every month that they delay, those costs are continuing to accumulate. So by helping them to see again that those costs are there and they're accumulating, I think it creates a little more incentive for them to consider getting started.
I love your quote, by the way. A genuine leader is not a searcher for consensus, but a molder of consensus. what a great quote. Thank you for sharing that.
Okay.
I want to be mindful of our time here, because we're going to keep on time here.
Mm-hmm.
In just a few minutes, and we have a number of other questions that have come in, and we're going to open up in the line in just a minute. Here's just one more, Rob, before we do that. What about the post-sale service and follow-up? Is it important to build a strong post-sales service delivery?
Sure. No.
Almost as a differentiator, someone asked.
Yeah, no, absolutely. In fact, we did an open line program, Dana, 6 or 8 weeks ago, on customer service. And, yeah, I think there is an expectation that you're going to have, you know, strong service and product delivery and customer service. And, you know, let's face it today, organizations have lots of choices. If they try your firm and they don't have a favorable experience and they can't get things rectified, I think they're going to – it's awful easy just to, you know, for many, many services and products to, you know, jump on the Internet and look for alternative suppliers, alternative sources.
Okay. Rob, why don't you take us to the last slide. In literally a minute or so, we're going to open up the line so you can talk directly to Rob about further questions. We have so many people on the line today. We're going to ask each of you to please mute your phone, because I'm going to take the system off mute, and then you can just listen. And then if you want to ask a question, just unmute your phone, and then we'll be able to all talk together. You'll see on your screen an area to register for our next open line program, which is entitled How to Manage with Less. We've had a number of requests around that topic, because everyone has to manage with less. This open line will share ideas about managing with less and how to deal with limitations and the opportunities of streamlining, what's important and what isn't, and how to apply some very specific ideas into your organization. So please sign up today and reserve a space for yourself, and let us know if you'd like your staff, members in your association groups, or other colleagues to attend. Space is limited, so please sign up very soon. In the next few days, you'll receive a recording and PowerPoint for today's program. Please feel free to share it with others in your organization or within your association. Rob and I want to thank you for your time today and for all the valuable ideas that have been shared. If you'd like to contact Rob to have further discussion on specifics about your industry, your team, or to have some one-to-one time together or to discuss any of the ideas shared today, you'll see Rob's contact information on your screen, and we'll be opening the line again in just a minute after I turn the recording equipment off. The information shared today is a property of Lighthouse Consulting Services, LLC, located in Santa Monica, California. Our mission statement is to bring effective insight to your organization. If you'd like more information on our services, please write me at dana@lighthouseconsulting.com. If you have other topics you'd like us to address, please let us know. Thank you again so much for joining us, and we're looking forward to having you join us for our next Keeping on Track Open Line program. Have a great day. Hold the line while I turn the recording equipment off, and we'll open the line up. And if you could please put your phones on mute, that would be much appreciated. Hold the line for one second.